Welcome to Missionary Talks, where we talk with missionaries and learn about their lives and work.
David Livingston was born in Blantyre, Scotland on March 19, 1813, almost 200 years ago. He was fortunate in that he was taught to read by his father at a young age and became a voracious reader as a child. He inherited his great love of books from his grandfather on his mother's side, who also lived in Blantyre. His grandfather was blessed with a large personal library from which David was allowed to borrow books. His favorite subject to read was science, though at the time it was thought that science and religion could not mix. One of his greatest detractors from his love of science was his own father, Neil Livingston. Neil believed, as many did at that time, that as one studied science, it would take him further away from God and the Bible. His father was a tea peddler. He would walk the whole region selling tea from house to house. Though he did not make much money, he enjoyed his job greatly because it gave him daily opportunities to share his faith with those whom he met. He would pray with people over their needs as he traveled throughout the area. He, as well as the whole family, were deeply spiritual. His distrust of science came from lack of education and understanding of how scientific the Bible actually is. It was not until David was 19 years old that he learned that science and religion were not mutually exclusive. It was at this time that he gave his life to Christ and became a Christian. Shortly after David's salvation, he and his father were in church and heard a letter read that was written by a Dr. Charles Gutzlaff. Dr. Gutzlaff was explaining that there was a great need for missionaries in China, and his suggestion for the greatest need was missionaries with medical training. On their way home from church that day, David asked his father what he thought of the letter and the need of scientific training. Since Neil was concerned with the need of missionaries and the missionary effort, he commented to David, "If science can open a Chinese man's heart to God, it must have some merit after all." This started David in the direction of becoming a medical missionary to China. He saved as much money as he could over the next 3 years. It was just enough to be able to attend one session of college at Anderson College in Glasgow. Since David was mostly self-taught in his education, he knew how to be motivated in school. He was a good student, even though he came to college with a little formal education. His whole focus in college was to go to China as a missionary. Since David studied full-time, he was not able to work. His next term in college was paid for by his brother John. He applied to be a missionary with the London Missionary Society while still a student at Anderson College. One of the questions asked of him on the application was, "What do you see as the most important work of the missionary?" After pondering the question for quite some time, he replied,
"The missionary's object is to endeavor by every means in his power to make known the gospel by preaching, exhortation, conversation, instruction of the young, improving, so far as is in his power, the temporal condition of those among whom he labors, by introducing the arts and sciences of civilization and doing everything to commend Christianity to their hearts and consciences. He will be exposed to great trials of his faith and patience from the indifference, distrust, and even direct opposition and scorn of those for whose good he is laboring. He may be tempted to despondency from the little apparent fruit of his exertions and exposed to all the contaminating influence of heathenism. The hardships and dangers of missionary life, so far as I have had the means of ascertaining their nature and extent, have been the subject of serious reflection, and in dependence on the promised assistance of the Holy Spirit, I have no hesitation in saying that I would willingly submit to them, considering my constitution capable of enduring any share of hardship or fatigue."
David was accepted as a provisional missionary with the London Missionary Society. He then graduated from Anderson College in September of 1838. His internship under Reverend Richard Cecil did not go well for young David. Though he was well-versed in Greek and Latin and had large portions of the Bible memorized, he was not a very good public speaker. Reverend Cecil initially recommended to the LMS to not accept David as a missionary. His excuse was David's inability to deliver a sermon, and the fact that his Hebrew grades were not up to par. the London Missionary Society was not as willing to give up on young Livingston. They explained to Reverend Cecil that David had no good formal schooling before going to college, and that he really was a good student, if given enough time. They asked Reverend Cecil to work with David a bit longer with that understanding. A short while later, he could recommend David to further training, and the London Missionary Society sent him to medical school. All of this training and direction was for David to go to China as a missionary doctor. However, as Dr. Livingston was preparing to sail for China, England and China became embroiled in the First Opium War. The LMS decided not to send any more missionaries to China during that time. The Missionary Society wanted to send him to the West Indies to work with other missionary doctors. But Dr. Livingston wanted to work in a pioneer ministry. He wanted to minister where no other missionary was working and medically treat people who had no previous contact with European medicine. Fortunately, David had met Robert Moffat, missionary in Southern Africa, while Moffat was home telling stories of Africa, seeking more prayer and financial support for the ministry. David asked the Reverend Moffat about some of the stories he told. He specifically wanted to know if Moffat really believed that there were people in the interior of Africa, as he had mentioned in his stories. Moffat replied,
"I know. The popular view is that the center of Africa is a wasteland. But that's only because no white man has ventured inland. But I can tell you this. Some mornings I have got up and looked towards the vast plain to the north, and I have seen the smoke of 1,000 villages where no missionary has ever been."
David decided Africa was where he could best be used. The Missionary Society agreed that he should go to Africa under Dr. Moffat. On December 8, 1840, the Reverend Dr. David Livingston was on a ship headed to Africa. Captain Donaldson, the captain of the George, taught David navigation using the stars and a quadrant. 4 months later, after being stranded at sea by a storm, carried to Brazil by the currents, and the ship refitted for sailing again, 28-year-old David and the George arrived in Cape Town. David was eager to start the journey north, where the smoke of 1,000 villages indicated that there were hundreds of thousands of Africans who needed to hear about the love of Christ. The end of July of that year, 8 months after he left home, he finally arrived at the mission station where he was assigned in Kuruman. Reverend Moffat had not yet returned to Africa from his trip back to Europe. Basically, David, along with the other missionaries, were holding things together waiting for Reverend Moffat. David did not much care for this and finally convinced Roger Edwards, another missionary at the Kuruman station, to accompany him on a trip further north to look for a suitable spot to build a new mission outpost. Thus began David Livingston's journeys within Africa. He started September 24, 1841, on his famous treks throughout the southern half of the continent. As a medical doctor, he was interested in treating people's physical illnesses for the purpose of sharing with them the gospel. As an explorer, he was concerned about finding easy routes from the coast to the interior of the country so that more missionaries would be able to minister within the dark continent. David Livingston left the Kuruman mission station with Roger Edwards and two African guides making their way by ox and cart. They traveled for 2 weeks to the north before they caught glimpse of their first village. Once the group knew that they were being watched by the locals, they were quickly surrounded by spear-wielding natives in leather tunics jumping up and down around the wagon. Unsure of how to read their behavior, David asked his guide if they were friendly. His guide, Palmer, believed that they would not be harmed. They were led by the local men into the village of cone-shaped huts. Shortly thereafter, David and the group met Chief Mosialili of the Bakwana tribe. The village was called Mobatsa, and through time this became the location of David's first mission station. This was also the location where he first encountered tampan, or as Roger Edwards told him, African lice. It's actually a venomous tick. Livingston awoke in the night covered with tampan. The treatment was to burn them out of the skin. There was a way to prevent the attacks, but it meant burning the ground beneath the hut or tent and laying a tarp down between the person and the ground. The next morning, David told the chief that he was a doctor, and the chief allowed him to set up a medical tent. Because of this, David was allowed to prepare the ground properly and set up his tent, in which he slept for the duration of his stay. Following that, Dr. Livingston would insist on preparing a medical tent as soon as he arrived in a village to avoid such problems. One of the humorous events during his stay was introducing the Bakwanas to his shaving mirror. They seemed to have a very enjoyable time trying to make the funniest face in the mirror. In all his travels, he wrote down exact locations and land features using the skills he learned aboard the George from Captain Donaldson. As soon as he arrived back in Kuruman from this first exploring trek, he was starting to plan his next trip. The second time, he was the only white man. He took with him his two previous guides and two other men to help with the oxen. This second trip is when he started to learn the Bantu language. This is the language spoken by the Bakwana and Bakwane tribes. Like missionaries today, he occasionally used the wrong words. Once while preaching against sin, he was actually talking about the evils of cow manure. Not even the great Dr. David Livingston was exempt from these types of language mistakes. David had made friends with the Bakwanian chief. Chief Sashele had listened to David preach many times. Finally, the chief asked David a question he could not answer. He wanted to know why, if it was such an important thing for people to hear the gospel, that it had taken so long for the white men to tell the Africans. When Livingston was 30 years old, he had already established the mission station in Mabotsa and was contemplating starting another station further north. One mid-afternoon, he was discussing plans with Mbalwe, a native preacher, or agent as they called them, when they heard the news of a lion in the area. They both rushed in and grabbed guns while the villagers grabbed their spears. When David first saw the lion in the grass, he estimated its weight at over 400 pounds. The lion escaped the mob and David and Mbalwe retreated back to the mission house. On the path back to the station, they walked within 10 feet of the lion before they realized it was watching them. He was able to shoot the lion in the neck before it attacked. But it did attack. As quickly as David shot the lion, it had leapt onto him and lifted him from the ground by biting into his left arm. The lion continued to hold David in his teeth and put his paw on David's head to begin dismembering him. Suddenly, another shot rang out. Mbalwe was able to shoot the lion a second time. The lion dropped David and then leapt on Mbalwe. The lion took him by the thigh. By this time, they were joined by the tribesmen, who were then able to spear the lion several times. The lion finally dropped dead. Livingston passed out and regained consciousness after he had been moved back to the mission house. He first inquired about Mbalwe's life and was pleased to find out that no one died trying to save him. He then instructed fellow missionary Roger Edwards on how to check for where the arm was broken and reset the bones in place. He never regained the full use of the left arm after that. In many ways, it was useless to him. But once again, by God's grace, he lived. David put little emphasis on the event, and had he not been asked to share the story so many times when he finally returned home to Europe the first time, it might not have been well publicized. In a letter to his father, this is all he had to say about the incident.
At last, one of the lions destroyed 9 sheep in broad daylight in a hill just opposite our house. All the people immediately ran over to it. And, contrary to my custom, I imprudently went with them, in order to see how they acted, and encouraged them to destroy him. They surrounded him several times, but he managed to break through the circle. I then got tired. In coming home, I had to come near to the end of the hill. They were then close upon the lion, and had wounded him. He rushed out from the bushes which concealed him from view and bit me on the arm so as to break the bone. It's now nearly well, however, feeling weak only from having been confined in one position so long, and I ought to praise him who delivered me from so great a danger. I hope I shall never forget his mercy. You need not be sorry for me. For long before this reaches you, it will be quite as strong as it ever was. Gratitude is the only feeling we ought to have in remembering this event. Do not mention this to anyone. I do not like to be talked about.
During his recovery and thinking about the events, David's mind turned to the young Mary Moffat, the oldest daughter of Robert Moffat, whom he had met in England. David could never think of marrying a European woman and bringing her to Africa, but Mary had been born and raised in Africa. Though Scottish, she felt more at home among the lions and snakes than she could ever feel at a ladies' tea party in Scotland. They were married in January of 1845. After their marriage, they moved to set up another mission station, leaving the one in Mabotsa under the charge of Roger Edwards. The new station had its physical difficulties, but there were some great spiritual strides made among the people. The conversion of Chief Sashele took place during this time. One of the greatest difficulties that David constantly struggled with did not come from the Africans themselves. 6 years before David arrived in Africa, the Boers began what was called the Great Trek, headed north away from the coast. Eventually, the Boers and Livingstone became bitter enemies. But for the grace of God, Livingstone could have died at the hands of the Boers on several occasions. Unfortunately, many Africans did. David did what he could to stop the Boers and their actions, and was successful for a time, but it did not last all his life. The Boers were bent on capturing and enslaving the Bakwain tribe where David's friend, Chief Sashele, lived. At the time, though, David and his family lived among them. David's biggest threat that he posed to the Boers was that he could right the people of Europe, from which the Boers descended, and tell them of the battle tactics that the Boers employed. This included sending African women and children into the battle first as human shields when they attacked a village. The Boers did not want the civilized world knowing how they carried out their enslavement tactics. Eventually, a drought drove the Livingstones and the Bakwain tribe from the area, and they started a settlement in Kolobeng near a river. It was at Kolobeng where David had some of his more fierce encounters with the Boers, and from whence the Livingstone expeditions to find a way through the Kalahari Desert took root. He wanted to lead the Bakwains out of Boer territory. David did not have the money to fund such a trip through the Kalahari, so he wrote a hunter friend of his, Captain Steele, and asked him to join the adventure. Captain Steele was not able to make the trip, but he sent another man to fund the trip for David in exchange for having Dr. Livingstone's help through the desert. Cotton Oswell was that man. They built a lifelong relationship through their time together on that exploratory trip as well as other treks in the future. His expedition, funded by Cotton Oswell, was an eventual success. Even though they had been led astray by guides of another tribe who purposefully led the group away from any water, after a month of traveling, they were 120 miles into the desert, too far to go back, and dying of thirst. God sent a local tribeswoman from the desert to cross their path. She was able to lead them to water and save the expedition from impending death. By this time, they had already sent their, quote, helpers away. They were free to go where the bushwoman led them. On July 4, 1849, they discovered the Zaugo River. Again, David was careful to map everything using his sextant and charts. Less than a month later, and 270 miles further north, they arrived at their goal, Lake Ngami. 2 years later, in 1851, David stood on the banks of the Zambezi, the first white man to see such a sight. It was not long before the locals started telling David and Cotton Oswell about the smoke that thunders further down the river. The smoke that thunders was the native word to describe a huge waterfall on the river. But due to the failing health of David's family, who had been traveling with him at the time, he had to put off seeing the waterfall for another trip. The family was starting to become physically worn from the malaria and other diseases that they suffered. The Livingstones then had 4 children. David made the decision to send his wife and children back to Scotland for a time, with the promise that he would join them in 2 years. After putting the family on a ship back to Scotland, David was in Kuruman when he got the news that the Boers had attacked Chief Sashele and the mission station at Kolobeng. Along with the Boers enslaving hundreds of the Bakwain, they killed 60 of Sashele's tribesmen. The chief escaped with some of his tribe. The Boers destroyed everything that David owned. All he had left was what was with him on his trip to the coast. He had lost all of his books, medical equipment, and medicines in the raid. At that time, David decided to no longer have a mission station where he would call home. He would be a permanent explorer. His next great trek led him to the west coast of Africa to Luanda, now known as the capital of Angola, Luanda. Without the help of a Portuguese sergeant, he and his expedition team would probably have been murdered in the trek. The Portuguese military provided David and his crew with any food and clothing they felt necessary after their narrow escape from the Bashingi tribe. On May 31, 1854, when David was 41 years old, he had completed the 2,000-mile trip from the mission station in Kuruman, southern Africa, through the Kalahari Desert and the West African jungle to the west coast. From the coast, David was offered a ride home on the British ship, the Forerunner. He refused the offer because he had promised a chief that he would bring his men back to him safe and sound once the expedition was over. However, Livingstone did send letters and reports back on the Forerunner. Unfortunately, the ship had been wrecked and all hands were lost along with his documents. He was greatly troubled by the loss of life. He then had to recreate his documents as much as possible, which took several weeks. When David returned the native helpers back to their chief, the chief was shocked. They had been gone almost 2 years. There was a general sense that all were lost. The arrival of all the men started a week's worth of celebration and storytelling. He immediately turned his thoughts to exploring the Zambezi River once again. His purpose was to find easy access from the coast to the interior of Africa. The trip to Luanda proved that going through the west was not a feasible route. 4 years after discovering the Zambezi, he finally stood at the top of the Smoke That Thunders. The noise surrounding him was so loud that using signs was the only way for he and his men to communicate. He stood on an island in the middle of the river and carved his initials and the year 1855 in a tree at the top of Victoria Falls. In May of 1856, he made it to the east coast of Africa by following the Zambezi. He wrote a letter to the London Missionary Society telling them that he had found a way to get missionaries into the interior and that there were many places that he had mapped out that would be prime locations for mission stations. David secured passage back to Scotland to be with his family. His promise to join them in 2 years took 4.5 to be realized. On his trip home, he got news that his father had died. While he was excited to be with his family again, he often chided himself with the thought that maybe he should have returned home sooner. He left home as a 27-year-old green missionary doctor. He returned for the first time as a 43-year-old seasoned explorer. His wife had not adjusted well to living in civilization. She only stayed with David's family a short time and then went to England to be with some of her parents' friends. While home, David was asked to give many speeches on his journeys through Africa. He was honored by the Royal Geographical Society with a gold medal. They asked him to give a speech and was encouraged to render the following words after looking into the crowd and seeing his old friend, Cotton Oswald.
I am only doing my duty as a missionary in opening up a part of Africa to the sympathy of Christ. I am only just now buckling my armor for the good fight. I have no right to boast of anything. I will not boast until the last slave in Africa is free and Africa is open to honest trade and the light of Christianity.
He also spent a great deal of time speaking on behalf of the London Missionary Society. He urged more people to take up the call to missions. The LMS also encouraged David to return to Africa and open a permanent mission station of his own. It still did not see the value of the work Dr. Livingstone was doing as an explorer. He was then offered a government position with a salary 5 times more than his missionary salary. His government position was as an explorer. He was also given a book publishing offer. With these two offers, he was able to part ways with the LMS. Not because of doctrinal issues or because he ceased to have a desire for missions, but because without the guiding hand of the LMS, he was finally able to perform the task that he felt God called to do. During this time, Queen Victoria requested a private audience with him. She burst into laughter when David told her that the chiefs in Africa were always amazed that Livingstone had never met his own big chief. In 1858, David, Mary, and their youngest son Zalga returned to Africa. After their return to Africa, he attempted to make the trip up the Zambezi River all the way to Victoria Falls in a steam-powered paddle boat. On his trip down the river, 2 years previous, he bypassed a segment of the river to make the trip shorter. Little did he know at that time that there were rapids that would be unnavigable. His efforts to return to the falls by a large boat were thwarted. The team with which he set out had little to no understanding of the great trials David had endured in Africa. Though they had all read his book, he was very uncomplaining within its covers. The reality of life in Africa was much more difficult. Ultimately, David seemed to blame himself for the loss of missionaries' lives because they came to Africa without a full appreciation of how hard and disease-filled the life in Africa really was. As he continued to explore from the eastern edge of the continent, he began to see more and more evidence of the slave trade. David began to focus on the abolishment of such a crime against humanity. Just 4 years after their return to Africa, Mary Livingston became ill with malaria. It was her first infection, and she died within a week at the age of 41. He wrote in his journal,
"It is the first heavy stroke I have suffered, and quite takes away from my strength. I wept over her, who well deserved many tears. I loved her when I married her, and the longer I live with her, I loved her the more. God pity the poor children who were all tenderly attached to her. And I am left alone in the world by one whom I felt to be a part of myself. I hope it may, by divine grace, lead me to realize heaven as my home, and that she has but preceded me in the journey. Oh, my Mary, how often we have longed for a quiet home since you and I were cast adrift at Colobeng. For the first time in my life, I feel willing to die."
Livingston still had 11 years to work in the dark but brightening continent of Africa. A couple of years after the passing of his wife, he took a trip back home to see his children. But before making the trip home, he made a trip to India. The trip to India was to sell his flat-bottomed riverboat. He could not afford to have his valuable boat fall into the hands of slave traders. So he sailed from Zanzibar, Africa, to Bombay, India, arriving in June of 1864. For some reason, he had a bit of trouble convincing the port authority in Bombay that he really did cross the ocean in a riverboat. On his second trip home, he wrote another book in which he detailed the mapping of the Zambezi River, and he gave lectures talking of the needs for legitimate trade with Africa to help end slavery. In August of 1865, he left England for the last time. His mother died while he was home, and he received news that his oldest son, Robert, had died in a prisoner of war camp while fighting in the American Civil War. On his next expedition, he came down with a relapse of his malaria. During this trip, his medicine box was stolen. He knew that it would probably be just a matter of time before he would succumb to the disease. The thieves of his medicine box returned to the coast and reported that Livingston had died. They brought the medicine box as proof of this. A search party was organized to find the venerable explorer. They never caught up with him, but there was plenty of evidence to say that the great Dr. David Livingston was still alive. He fell into a party of Arabic slave traders. Though he despised their work, he traveled with them in an attempt to share the gospel with them, in hopes of stopping the trade from the inside. Livingston was, and is still today, criticized for receiving help from the slave traders. Without their help, he would have died sooner from his malaria. He traveled off and on with the slave traders, mostly traveling by himself, and with as few as 6 African helpers for the next several years. November 3, 1871, had the great missionary David Livingston meeting with Henry Morton Stanley. Stanley walked into the village of Ujiji carrying an American flag and uttering the words, "Dr. Livingston, I presume?" Stanley brought letters from home and news from the outside world. They explored the region together for a short time, in which Livingston learned that the lake he was studying, and hoping would be the source of the Nile, turned out to not be what he had hoped. They spent 3 months together in which Stanley attempted to convince Livingston to return to the coast. Stanley returned with only letters and journals from Dr. Livingston. That was the last time any white person would see Livingston alive. During the night of April 30, 1873, Livingston climbed out of his cot and kneeled down and crossed his hands in prayer. He was still in that position when his body was found the next day. His three African helpers, Susie, Chuma, and Jacob Wainwright, prepared David's body for the trip back to the coast and ultimately to Great Britain. They removed his heart and buried it under an mvula, or mpundu, tree. Then they carried his body over 1,000 miles to the coast, through war zones, swamps, and jungles. It took them 8 months to arrive. Jacob Wainwright, since he spoke English better than the other two, was asked to accompany David's body back to England. Once in London, an autopsy was performed on the body for proof that it was, indeed, Dr. David Livingston. They needed only check the bones of his upper left arm and knew that they were in possession of the doctor's body. The lion attack of 30 years previous was used to identify him. 11.5 months after he died, David Livingston's body was laid to rest at Westminster Abbey. His gravestone reads, "Brought by faithful hands over land and sea, here rests David Livingston, missionary, traveler, philanthropist, born March 19, 1813, at Blantyre, Lanarkshire, died May 1, 1873, at Chitambo's village, Ulala. For 30 years, his life was spent in an unwearied effort to evangelize the native races, to explore the undiscovered secrets, to abolish the desolating slave trade of Central Africa." Where, with his last words, he wrote,
"All I can say in my solitude is, may heaven's rich blessings come down on everyone, American, English, Turk, who will help to heal this open sore of the world."
Speaking at a 100-year celebration of the birth of Dr. Livingston, Lord Curzon, president of the Royal Geographical Society, said, "In the course of his wonderful career, Livingston served three masters. As a missionary, he was the sincere and zealous servant of God. As an explorer, he was the indefatigable servant of science. And as a denouncer of the slave trade, he was the fiery servant of humanity." And with that, we'll close our biography of Dr. David Livingston. Born March 19, 1813, died May 1st, 1873.
You've been listening to Missionary Talks with David Peach. Please visit us at missionarytalks.com.